Sorry for the delayed start, but as we said, it's unusual for him not to be here. So if we look then, can I ask you, the first item on the agenda is the minutes of the 21st of April, and they were circulated and published on the 5th of May 2022. Can I have someone who was present at that meeting to propose it as a true record? Right, so that's...
Me.
That's that.
Oh, you know, it's myself.
And someone who was here to second it, please.
I think that'll have to be you, Chairman.
Will it have to be me, right? Okay, so that's me. Right. Well, having done that, can I then actually, if you looked at those minutes, can I actually record our thanks to both Stephen and also to Rob Wolfe, because matters that we raised regarding the COVID payments to small businesses, we did ask questions about that, and Stephen undertook to get us detailed information as to what checks and balances were made before those payments were done, and we had a very full account from Stephen and Rob Wolfe. So I think we really should thank them for all the time they took in getting that to us. So thanks very much, and can you pass your thanks on, please, to Stephen. Then I'll move on, and we have apologies from Roy.
Yeah, thanks, Chairman. Apologies from Councillor James and also Councillor Fordham, who has been substituted tonight by Councillor McEwen.
Right, thank you very much. And I think the next thing I would like to do is, I think all of the councillors know our new member on the committee. A new member is Tony Nixon. Tony, you will know him because he was mayor last year, but he has now joined our committee. But I would like to introduce Tony Nixon to our officers, and maybe the officers would introduce themselves to Tony so that he knows who you all are whenever you're speaking to us, please.
I'm Stephen Budley, Chief Internal Officer of Mist Manager.
I'm Jude Corporate Brand, Head of Governance and Corporate Services.
And I'm a fellow Brand, the Chief Counsel.
Right, so that's all right. I would also like to welcome Councillor Mark at the back there, although you're not a member. It's lovely to see you, because I don't think you've managed to any of our scrutiny meetings for quite some time. So you're very welcome to join us tonight, Mark. It's lovely to see you and to see your wife here with you. So you're very welcome here tonight.
With his bodyguard as well.
Well, isn't he lucky? Yes. So it's nice to see you this evening. And the next thing I need to do is actually ask or tell you that I have heard that the cabinet member who usually does join us tonight, I would imagine the officers know that he's had a massive stroke, but I did hear today that he is now out of hospital. But I think, you know, that we would all like to send the councillor our best wishes, and I'm sure that the officers would like to be included in that, because he is very good at coming along to these meetings. So could you make sure that our thanks get passed on?
He's upset about the accounts getting struck.
Yeah. Okay, so I think that's all of the sort of housekeeping that we have to do, and we can now move forward, and we'll get Stephen, please. You're going to introduce the first item, 3A, and that's the Strategic Risk Register, please, as at the 1st of April.
Okay, thank you, Chair. This report, it starts on page 3 of the agenda, and I'll briefly take you through a few of the main points, but really the highlight for members' attention is the table at 3.1 at the bottom of page 3 on the agenda, which is the summary of the number of risks that we have and the change from the 30th of September to April. So, as you can see there, one of the amber medium risks has been dropped from the risk register, and we are now down to 8 risks rather than the 9 strategic risks. I will briefly mention that again later, just to update you on where we're at. So we are moving in a good direction in terms of reducing the number of overall risks. If I bring you down a couple of pages to page 5, this is where we set out the detail about the changes in the risk, really, and it starts at 5.7. So as I said, one medium risk has been deleted, and that was risk C3, and this was around the failure to manage changes to the town centres as a result of changes arising from local and national restrictions. So it was a very COVID specific risk, and that's the reason partly why we've taken it off the agenda, off the risk register, because it isn't really a risk of that high nature now. We've come out of all of the legal restrictions and the measures that were put in place, so it was felt that that didn't need to be on there anymore. In terms of the rest of the risk register, risk C1, which is really the financial risk around funding for the council, has reduced from a 20 down to a 12. So whilst that is still a red risk and is still quite significant for the council, it has improved, and we feel we're in a better position in looking at a higher risk for that. And also that risk has changed its description to try and capture better the details of the risk. So it used to be the council's financial stability is adversely affected in the short and medium term. It is now quite a lot longer, but it now is the funding available to council from central funding resulting from changes to business rates, new homes bonus, will not be known until the autumn of the earliest. This, together with increases in inflation and interest rates, budget planning difficulties, resulting in a risk of overcommitment and financial. So it's tried to, rather than being quite high level, it's tried to set out what the specific risks are. And again, risk C4 has been reworded to remove the specific reference to COVID and just be more general about our partnership working with partner organisations. And again, C6, for the same reasons, we made it more a generic risk and removed the references to COVID out of that as well. That's the detail that I was going to cover in terms of pulling anything out. The rest of the items, we've got the Appendix 1, which is the high-level summary of those risks showing you the progress as it stands. And then Appendix 2 is the detailed nature of each of those risks with the controls put in place by officers. So this report, this risk register was approved, went through leadership team and is approved by Cabinet as stated in the report. So it is now presenting to this committee to review the progress and to monitor. I'm happy to take any questions, Chair.
Yeah, do you want me to go through page by page, or will I just say if you've got anything you want to raise, if you just put your hand up and I'll ask you. Brendan, tell us the page number, please.
Number 5, without being to be naive, what are the changes to business rates?
In terms of the business rate, at the moment we're talking about whether it's 75% local retention, whether it's 100%, I think 100% definitely is available. What we're going to do about valuation of business rates, are we going to have a rebate, are we going to revalue at greater periods, what we're going to do about appeals and losses. And we've obviously only got a 1 year local government final settlement. We were promised a couple of months ago, Michael Gove said that we'd have a 2 year one for these now as well. So I think it's just a lack of clarity on the consulting on the new home bonus, but that hasn't come through. So it's all kind of up in the air as to how we're going to be financed going forward. So we've literally got 1 year that we're sure of, and then you've got the next year. Your kind of crystal ball game.
Basically, the money goes down to London and only a certain percentage comes back.
You get a proportion of your rate, but it's how many, like on new home bonus, it's how many homes you have to build before you get anything back. Mm. And on the business rate, it's what you generate in your area, but then it's how much you can keep and how much the top-ups and tariffs are. So that's how much we have to pay to the government out of our collection.
Right.
So all of that is being re-looked at and revalued as part of the Fair Funding Settlement, because they're looking to make sure that it's fair across the whole of the country and that everybody gets the right amount for their area.
So at the moment, sorry.
That's all right, carry
so
on.
At the moment then, different areas are charged different business rates or get different percentages back?
So they all get the same percentage back, but then it's based on a top up and tariff. So because it's a 1 year settlement, they have something called a safety net, so you don't lose out. But going forward, it's well, what is business rates? We're always talking about stimulating the high street. Should we do a different scheme and not have business rates as they are? So everything is kind of up in the air as to what we're going to do going forward as a whole.
Thank you. Thank you.
Government final.
You quite happy with that, Brendan?
Yes, yes, I know more than what I know.
Well, that excellent. Well done, well done. Right, Peter.
Yeah, just a couple of quicks. Just really, just as I was saying to these people, just so you know, I've read the report.
I was going to check on that. Your page number, please.
Sorry, 8 in our
page case. 8.
C4, I was looking at. Amber risk. Really, was just to ask the question, failure to work in partnership to sustain support to vulnerable residents. It may be a silly question, but I'm used to asking silly questions. Partnership with whom?
It will be the council's partners, so it will be police, social care,
the county council,
voluntary sector. So it's all those other organisations that we would work with. Yeah. So that risk is all about making sure we maximise the benefit for the residents from who we work with and how we work with them.
And one other question.
Carry on.
On C7, if I may. Really just cheered me up because it said at the bottom of the paragraph, it said the move to home working has increased the vulnerability to malware issues. Well, yeah. I'm not in favour of homeware issues. Home working is a general principle. And so anything like that, I think, well, perhaps we shouldn't be working from home.
I think that,
in the room are saying,
That's just a fact, isn't it? You know, malware can come in.
I just noticed.
I think that in actual fact, when it comes to local government, as far as I'm aware, there are very, very many local governments where the officers and staff are still all working from home. Mm-hmm. My daughter, for example, who works in Scotland, is only allowed to go into the office if she has a valid reason for going in and if she has permission from the chief executive to go in. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's the same down here.
Yeah. If I can actually, we've not long started a trial, so we are actually we're trying a formal approach to home working, but there is an expectation as part of that that every role across the council is assessed and employees will be put into categories which determines what the expectation is on them, but between the split between being at home and being at work. Mm-hmm. And there is a minimum expectation that everybody will spend 20% of their time in the office. Mm-hmm. And we'll be reviewing that plan to see how well it works. We'll survey the staff, and we will engage with members as well to see whether it's caused any issues. So we are making changes. They are slightly steady, but we are making changes.
Yeah. Okay. The note to me is that yesterday I tried to get hold of somebody in planning.
Oh.
Starting at the top and working all the way down to the toilet cleaner, and nobody answered the phone. Mm-hmm. One person answered the phone, then said this, the automatic reply said, this person has put the phone down. Well, I'm sure they didn't, because they could be able to. But, and I needed a reply for tomorrow's meeting. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get a reply. So somebody somewhere ought to be answering the phone, didn't they? But anyway, sorry. It's nothing to do with us.
Anything else? I've got one or two questions, Stephen. On page 15, you're talking about the future High Street Fund programme to be delivered, and it says there's an ongoing programme monitoring taking place via the programme delivery team and the project board. Who are they and who do they report to?
I don't know the exact details of the individual officers who are on that project team, but it will. The Future High Street is under the head of development.
Yeah, that's development.
That area, so it will be regeneration officers along with finance and other people.
I am actually on that board.
Oh, are you right? Good. You can tell us all about it then, Emma, please. Are there external organisations in on it as well, Emma?
There are some representatives from the County Council, and there is a representative from the Town Centre Partnership on the board as well.
Where does that person from the Town Centre Partnership come from?
I think that's because I'm trying to think what the name is. I'm just trying to find the agenda, and I'll be able to tell you.
It's not you.
I think it's basically, as part of that, what they're trying to look at is they've got a couple of external people that are bringing additional support and advice on how what we're doing impact on the wider area so that we can bring their knowledge and skills in.
Right.
So I think she's there as part of looking at football and how all of the stuff connects. Right. And looking at the impact on the traders.
She's not representing the traders in the town centre at all, is she?
No, not in that.
No,
bit.
No.
She's giving advice from the traders' perspective.
Yeah, yeah. Do we have any of the traders who come along to that board?
Not to the project board.
Not yet. To the project board. Right. Okay, thanks for that, Emma and Stephen. Just then, over the page, what is SGRIP Group? That's just on page 16. It's probably something very, very simple, but I was trying to work it out and couldn't. I was looking back over the pages.
If I may, Chair, I would have to say that I'm not aware of what that one is, and I was just looking if it's referenced in the rest of the list.
I just haven't. I don't see words
no,
where it could be the anagram for. And I thought Stafford.
Translation gateway is it?
Gateway. what RIP could be saying?
If I may, Chair, with that one, I will go. This risk was written and the actions through the head of development. So I will go away and try and find that to just verify that.
The Chief Executive and I had a chat about this a little, and I said, why when you do reports, not necessarily Stephen, why do you have to, and you said this at your last meeting, I think,
yeah.
Why do you always put the abbreviation in? Maybe once at the top, and then you have to keep turning the page and see what they're talking
about.
Some of these, there's like a 9-letter abbreviation.
You
have to spend time looking, as you said.
You spend ages going back over and
saying, why can't you put them in full? It costs a lot more ink.
Or even give us what do they call
it? As you said, I think, these reports are for us, not for these guys who know all the words in the abbreviations. Most of them.
I had another question I wanted to ask Stephen and all three of you. If you look at page 19, we're talking here about service level agreements, and we're talking about the fact that service level agreements are in place that support 6 voluntary sector organisations. Now, I know that those 6 voluntary organisations are, for example, Age Concern Stone, Age Concern Stafford. It's also Women's Aid Staffordshire, and I think Citizens Advice is one of them. But it's saying here service level agreements monitored on a quarterly basis. And I wonder who in fact monitors these service level agreements, and at what point is there some kind of reporting done back to council? Because this is a case where the council, as you all know, we used to give grants to a whole lot of small charities in the borough, and then the decision was made that we would no longer do that. We would in fact draw up these service level agreements with all the different organisations, and I've mentioned some of them that immediately come to mind. But it does tell us here that service level agreements monitored on a quarterly basis. And I'm just wondering, who is doing that monitoring and where? Because I would have thought that maybe the Borough Council surely have representatives who go to Age Concern Stafford, Age Concern Stone, Women's Aid, Citizens Advice. Where is the reporting back coming from these organisations who are getting the grants from the Borough?
Chair, if I could take that one, that would fit within the remit of the Interim Head of Corporate Business and Partnerships remit. It would be somebody in her team who would do that. So whoever the borough gives money to support the voluntary sector, they would set out in the service level agreement what level of service and then that organisation would report back into that team on the funds. I'm not aware that it's then reported onward anywhere. But that would be like many contracts that the council will have with different suppliers, that each then just down to office with their report on it, and they would probably then report by exception if there were concerns, or it would be for the scrutiny committee.
What scrutiny committee do this? Would that be resources, or would it be...
Community.
community and wellbeing ends.
Oh, right, but I'm on community and wellbeing and I don't remember ever hearing anything about... I think
charity would be done by exception, so either there'd be a problem and they bring it to you, or as part of your work programme you could determine to look at that set of arrangements.
Oh, right.
It's not necessarily ongoing, because I would imagine some people aren't particularly large.
Chairman, didn't we at one time that the council, the full meeting, I seem to remember, agree that if somebody from the council attends one of these groups, they give a report?
Well, that's why I was saying, do you remember that we did in fact have, we had representatives to outside bodies?
Visit Stafford, I'm on Visit Stafford, I used to be a representative.
Yeah. Do you briefly submit to one of them, I think?
Probably, yes. The West Coast Rail, I was just put on the West Coast Rail.
Yes, absolutely.
And I did a report.
That's right.
Not that I know anything about rail or West Coast Rail, but I mean, you've got to start somewhere.
Absolutely.
Right, I was just taking a note of that, because if it's supposed to go to community and well-being, then that is good to know. There's something else I noticed. Yeah, just to show that I'm not always criticising. I think it's excellent. Page 20, we were being told that there is in fact staff mediation, undertaking mediation training, and I think that's good. It must be good to be supportive of staff there. So I think that's a good thing. Mike?
Chair, I think you make a good point actually on the previous one on page 19. The service level agreements are there and are monitored. So that we can see that we're getting value for the
exactly.
In there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think actually part of our function is that we ought to note that we're getting value for it. So we'd like to have a report back say, yes, the service level agreements are being met.
Yeah, but that's not going to come to audit and accounts. That's just what they're saying to us, and I've been saying, well, where does it go to? And
well, I think we need to know that somebody actually has monitored it.
Yeah.
We can suggest someone looks at it, couldn't we?
Yeah.
Reports to us.
It says, yeah, but that's only whenever you read the fine print in the agenda, you pick these things up, isn't it? Right, so that sounds good. So that report finished on page 37. Has anybody got anything else they want to bring up on Stephen's item there? Right, okay, we're going back then, because what you're being asked to do, the recommendation is that you note the draft strategic risk register and you consider the progress made in identification and management of the strategic risks. So are you doing that, members? Right? Right, so you are noting. Right, thank you very much. We've got a seconder for that.
Yeah.
Right, we're then moving on to page 38, and this is where I'm going to get another bit of paper, I think. Please forgive me, but my bits of paper are all over the place here. It's Stephen again who's giving the internal audit report, and it's on page 38.
Oh, thank you, Chair. This is the internal audit annual report for 21-22. It's a summary of the work that was carried out by the internal audit section, and it will set out the annual opinion from myself as Chief Internal Auditor. And will be used by the committee to inform their later decisions on the annual government statement. As generally with my reports, I won't dwell on the covering the report, and I'll skip down to the actual details of the report. So, starting off with Appendix 1 on page 41, the committee, we will report progress throughout the year to this committee. However, quarter four always falls around the same time as the annual report coming to the committee. So, whilst the annual report contains everything, Appendix 1 sets out the reports that the committee haven't previously seen or had an update on that was carried out by the section in the year. So, page 41 sets out the audit reports that were issued in the quarter, and really there's two there just to bring members' attention to. First is treasury management and the second are IT asset management. They were both given partial assurance in the report that we did, and whilst there weren't any major significant issues, there were some areas just to be concerned as set out in the final column of that. The rest of the work that we did in the quarter was all substantial assurance, so there was nothing to raise to members' attention. Over the page, a couple of pages on page 43, is the summary of the follow-ups that we've carried out as well that haven't previously been reported. And that shows that the first one, critical information systems not supported by IT, had moved from limited to partial, so there was still some progress to make. And two areas, leisure open book and stream management, had retained partial assurance. The first one of those, partly because there hadn't been a need to have the finance meetings where the recommendation was about, and this was all due to the leisure contractor not actually asking for any further financial support, so we didn't need to look at that any further. And then the tree management, there was progress from the last follow-up, but we still had six trees that had been identified in 2015 as potentially requiring felling and all major works that hadn't yet been progressed at the time we did the felling.
Yeah, I'd just say, it seems only takes them 7 years to sort some trees out. I mean, I don't know if I'm a tree feller.
No. We'll come back to that. Well, let's see who finishes.
In terms of the summary, that's all I have to say. If you're happy, Chair, I'm happy to take questions on the appendix if you want before we go into the details, if it makes more sense to members.
Right, so we are then going to be open to questions. Anyone get any questions that they want to ask? Mike, I was too busy looking to see where
I'm actually quite concerned about the tree management, because if there are six trees that are due for felling, given that we try and preserve trees where possible, they must be being felled for a reason.
Yeah.
It normally is that they're in poor condition. We will be on risk. If something happens with these trees and someone is injured or property is damaged or even someone killed. And for that not to have been addressed for 7 years, I feel we're actually creating a risk.
Judith?
You can raise the committee's concern with the interim head of service, who possibly isn't aware of this,
but he's managed his
attention and
asking
to prioritise that.
Right, so you will raise that.
If they could let us know.
If it's
what
let us know.
And reassure us that the council is not to be left on risk.
Sometimes you discuss things really fairly often.
If I may, Chair, I think the previous time it came when we did the last following, there were something like 36 trees at that point, so there has been
there have been some attended to.
I understand we are either in the progress or about to look at a new tree survey of the whole borough, and occasionally that does bring some changes.
But in actual fact, you're just going to raise that with the interim head of service.
I presume, Madam Chairman, that it's a bit like potholes. If there's five left, they have five since 2015 needed the least attention, but actually need attention.
It doesn't matter, there's still ones that have deteriorated. I've got a point there that I want to raise with you, Stephen. I'm concerned that the no finance meetings have taken place, despite the fact that we have this the open book policy with leisure. And it's all very well to say that they have not come to us with any requests for financial assistance. If we have an open book policy with one of our partnerships, then I feel that in actual fact, the books ought to be being looked at by the cabinet member for leisure, or finance. Someone ought to be looking at those books, even if they're not coming to us for financial assistance. The books ought to be looked at if we've got an open book policy with them. Otherwise, why have an open book policy?
Emma is probably the best person.
Right, well, Emma, you're very well. Yeah, but I want to hear why they're not doing it.
The open book policy only related to the 2021 and the 21-22 financial year in which we agreed to give them additional support. Mm. So they are required to report on outcomes and activities and all of the rest of the stuff that's in the plan, but obviously not their commercial financial figures. I think although they give an overview of what their overall loss is, which I believe goes to the resources. For the 2021 financial year, we have now settled that year, and they did an independent audit by their auditors on our figures. For the sense of their figures, I reviewed them, I compared them against the audit, I did some checks, I then had sent that in May 2022 to Stephen to approve as Chief Internal Auditor and Tim Willis, the Interim Head of Finance, to confirm that he was happy, that it looked reasonable what we looked at. So we have now settled the 2021 figures and had that meeting. And then we've also, they've also come back to us with the 21-22 figures, and they haven't actually made any loss, so they don't require any support from us for 21-22.
Right.
And we've since had a meeting where we've discussed finances in early June.
Right. But you're not telling me now that you're no longer having an open book policy with them.
So in terms of the financial figures and looking and scrutinising and asking for copies of invoices and all of their day-to-day expenditure, mm-hmm. we don't look at that because we pay them a management fee to manage that
service. Right. And I'll come back to you in a minute, Tony. So who audits Freedom Leisure then? If we are not looking at their books, who is auditing Freedom Leisure?
They are audited by their own auditors.
Right.
But we have a contract with them to pay a management fee, and that is what we pay. So we've only looked at their detailed figures on an open book basis for those financial years that they asked us for additional financial support.
Tony, sorry.
Going back to those additional years, that was the time when their staff were all furloughed, wasn't it?
It was all to do with the COVID arrangements.
Yeah, at that point, the Count Street team carrying out some of the work in Rowan Park, I believe, because they weren't doing it at that time. That's correct, isn't it?
They were. I think they had an arrangement where they paid them, so Freedom were actually contracting to provide some work from
when
they were then paid.
Well, my only question is, all the staff were furloughed, were the senior management team furloughed, or were they still taking their full salaries during that period of financial support?
I do know that they did make some arrangements where they minimised the loss as much as they could. So the loss itself was £400,000 that year, and then, as I say, for 21-22, they mitigated and tried to reduce the loss as much as possible. They also had the National Leisure Recovery Fund money, so they made it very poor surplus in 21-22.
Yeah, but the question was the senior management team furloughed, or were they receiving their full salary during that time of support?
Yeah, they didn't receive their full salary, but I don't really want to disclose what they did give in public meeting.
Mate.
Through you, Chair, I seem to remember a report that the senior management had taken a 20% salary cut for the period where they were receiving support from us.
Right.
To help covering the furlough money.
Right.
So they did take a cut.
Right.
And I believe the open book and recovery operation is all about ensuring when they're asking for support if it's justified.
Yeah.
So it's not a general open book.
No, that's been clarified by Emma there. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, you fine with that, Tony? Yeah. Right, okay. Right, thank you for that. Right, that
Do you want me to, if there's no more questions, or shall I present the full?
Tony will carry on now, and if any of you have any further questions, don't hesitate to put your hand up, and Jim will nudge me if I don't see your hand up.
Okay, thank you, Chair. This is now moving on to the annual report, which starts on page 44 of the agenda.
Right, can you all find page 44 so that you're with?
Well, I will jump down to page 47, which is the first thing that I will jump out. The first few paragraphs and pages are general instructions for the report and what is covered.
Right.
So the first area to draw members' attention to is the review of internal audit. So every year within the standards, we have to do a review of internal audit ourselves to make sure we comply with the standards, that we feel that we are as compliant as we can be and doing a good job. Now, generally this is an internal review that we do. We do have an external review, and that is required every 5 years, and we have got that booked in the autumn of 2022 to have that again. And as members who've been on the committee a few years will recall, we do bring a copy of that report to the committee with the outcome of that as well separately. There is a number of actions that we've identified which are in Appendix 3, but I won't go through here line by line, but I'm happy to take any questions that have come out of this review. But generally, we've found that we are compliant with the standards, and we feel that we have got a robust service that meets all of those requirements, so that you can place assurance on the opinion that I give and the detail of the work that I give. So that's the first part of the report, is to give you some assurance that, based on looking at everything, we're compliant, and everything that follows in this report is as robust as can be. In terms of that, then, I will jump down a couple more pages to page 49, and that's really to give members the most important bit of this report, and that is the actual opinion that is based on everything that is to follow. And we're saying at the top of page 49 in that box at 2.8 that we're giving partial assurance. And that is reflected by the number of audits that we've seen that we've given partial assurance to on individual elements. So it's not saying that there's any major problems, that we're saying that we can't give assurance that everything's going wrong, but we're not in a position to be able to say everything's wonderful as well. So that's putting that into the context. And that's based on the work that we've done. So slightly lower at table 3.2 on page 49 of the agenda. We've talked about the number of audits that we have reviewed in the year and the opinions that we've given for each of those individuals. So pleasing to note, we've got 10 substantial, 6 partial, and nothing with a lower opinion than that this year. So that is quite good. Previous years we have had some dropping into the limited assurance for that. There was one area with no opinion, and that's the customer transformation audit, and that's just because we felt that the work that we've done wasn't sufficient to be able to balance an opinion on just
Chair, I'm going to have a coffee for
over the page, at the top of page 50, we give a summary of the follow-ups that have done that we've done in the year, and we've done one area had moved from limited to partial, one area from partial to substantial, and all other areas remained as partial assurance. So that is quite good over the year, that we are seeing generally some improvement. But the three where we haven't quite seen as much as we would have wanted to give a review, an increased opinion. Section 4 of the report sets out the performance of my team and how well we've done in delivering our audits. Unfortunately, we weren't as proactive in getting the report out as we had hoped. So the table 4.1, we managed to get 17 reports out of 23 planned for the year, which is a 74% performance against a target of 90%. That isn't quite as bad as it looks as a stark figure there, as set out in page paragraph 4.3, that we had got a further 10 audits that had been commenced but not completed, and 7 of those were pretty much complete. We just hadn't got to the point of issuing a report to be able to count it within the figures. The main reasons for that are really twofold. First is we have some support from an external contractor, and they had some scheduling issues due to sickness, and then also some delays where they were trying to liaise with our officers internally as well due to sickness. And one of the issues with contractors is they try and like to block a book of time to do an audit and then move on, so they're not quite as flexible as the in-house team, so any delays can cause some issues with them trying to get back on track and follow them up. And the second one is the opposite of that. It's actually issues within teams, particularly in the Bevs and Bens teams, a little bit in finance, where we had some delays due to all of their workloads and delays with the accounts, and also within IT as well. So that's really where we had issues. If we do count those seven audits that were virtually there in the figures, it actually put our performance at 104% of the 23, so we actually would have done more audits than we'd planned, and that is due to carrying out, completing some of the audits from the previous year that hadn't been finished as well. So generally we won't let things disappear, we will always report on them, and where necessary we'll carry all the over to the following year. Chair, John.
Are you finished?
Could I ask a question, Chair?
If Stephen's finished, I was going to let Stephen finish. And
I
then
think really that, Chair, that is all I was going to flag up in detail in the report in terms of the content.
Right, yeah, yes, mate. Go on, I just wanted to.
On section 4.3, reports not quite ready for publishing but have substantially been completed. Was any of this impacted because of working from home rather than working in the office?
If I may, Chair, it wouldn't be possible to really quantify that. All we can say in terms of the experience that we had, generally the reasons they weren't completed were we were waiting for small pieces of information, clarification on points that we were raising before we could produce the report, so trying to make sure everything was right. I wouldn't like to say yes or no whether that was home working. Certainly within the first three on there, the business grants, council tax and the national non-domestic rates, as well as development management, that was just workload issues and staffing issues within the team. And I wouldn't, they were all working for, like, particularly the Revs and Bens side, they were heavily involved in COVID grants and then the energy grants. So it was just sheer workload and pressure that they, because of the additional tasks they were picking up, they couldn't devote the time to ourselves. And at times we did have to step back and let them get that, because it was, particularly the energy grants, it was almost that we needed to get that money out as quickly as possible to the people under government instruction, as well as it being the right thing to do. So I wasn't going to demand that they provided our information and held that up. In terms of some of the other areas, there have been various aspects. The garden waste and blue bag, there's obviously been some turnover in officers dealing with that as well, and some sickness within the teams that have delayed a few clarification points and made it harder for us to validate the last few bits of those. So to answer your question, it's not possible for me to say. There may be some impact from home working, but it may just be other aspects as well. It is a whole range.
Okay. Any other questions from members?
I just noticed a comment that our favourite department, the IT department, get a mention a lot in these accounts.
How
not
unusual.
Always for the good.
Yeah. One or two comments from me, if you don't mind, Stephen. I mean, I'm interested in the figures. You know, you say that, you know, your percentages and you're not very concerned about them. I think, you know, the sort of 17 from 23 is quite a big jump in my book. You know, I think, you know, there's quite a lot that were planned but not completed when you look at the figures. And thanks very much for giving us the numbers as well, because I feel that, to me, that's more important than just a percentages. So that's the first thing I wanted to say. One or two things then on page 51. And you did explain, you know, that the delays in completing the audits. So it really does seem to be, you know, there are staffing issues both within staff, within our borough council, but also within the contractors that we are employing to do work for us. Is there nothing the borough council can do about these issues with our contractors?
If I may, Chair, we do maintain regular contacts and have regular meetings with the contractors and their managers to try and deal with this. Obviously, it does become difficult where there have been delays from our side, not being able to accommodate more last minute changes in their scheduling that then upsets them, because the staff they're using are working here and at lots of other places, and as I say, they do tend to block a bit of time. So it's not as easy for them to sort of drop a day here and then come back to us another day later, because they have moved on to other pieces of work. I think it is just a matter of the period that we've been through in the last sort of 12 months still, having COVID impacts and other sickness, and also some vacancies in the contractors, people moving on as they do. And part of the reason that we do hold use the contractors is because we had difficulties recruiting in-house, and we were trying to train somebody up, and we were taking on the apprentice, and that combination of things. So unfortunately, in the whole sector, it is quite difficult at times to get good staffing and reliable staffing.
Judith?
Chair, if I can, I just wanted to add to what Stephen had said in terms of the impact of COVID, because the Omicron variant was kind of in circulation around that last year, and it certainly had quite a big impact on our own staff, not just within the audit, you know, but across the council really. And I think we've seen that reflected elsewhere as well. So I'm not saying that's entirely answered.
No.
But it probably will be a good part of that, particularly when at the end of the year, you know, we're trying to tie things up. It did come at an unfortunate
I think the time in January, February time, we probably, particularly at the Cannock stand, we probably had more impact in COVID in that quarter than we had at any other point over the two years. That's because of the transmissible nature of it. I think the time is going to come to an end where we can't keep blaming COVID and we're going to have to look at what actually is causing any of these problems. We can't keep saying it's COVID. Because there's so many places where that's just running out as an excuse. 2 points here, Stephen, if I may, and it's it's number 4.6. I'm on page 51 and 4.7. There are three areas in progress, and they require significant more work to complete. Two audits have not even been started yet. Can you give us an assurance that these audits are going to come top of the list for 22-23? They're not going to get shoved out of the way, are they, because of new lists for 22-23?
No, if I may, Chair, no, they won't. The audits that we've got in progress will be prioritised.
Right, they will be prioritised, right?
Particularly the IT areas. The head of IT is quite particular on this, that he doesn't want too many audits in his area at one time, because they are a smallish team anyway, and we do have quite a few IT audits each year, so he doesn't agree to audits starting until the previous ones have ended, unless the bulk of the work has been done, which is why we've got a couple in there. And the section 106, I can say there was some delay in that, because there were various pieces of work being carried out in the year, which impacted on our audit as well, and it made sense for us to delay reviewing a lot of that area until they'd done. And I believe the scrutiny committees were quite involved in some of that and looking at the areas as well.
Yeah, the 106 one.
Those won't be forgotten about and done. The two that have been started, we will try and get those done as soon as we can. Obviously, with the finance system and forever being here as well, we won't try and start that while they're still busy trying to deal with the external audit and their prioritisation. So that one may not be done as early as possible, but we do always try and schedule things in with them. And I know I did speak with the chair at the pre-meeting around this. Would be the finance system. We deliberately decided to leave that throughout this year. But I have been heavily involved with them. discussing the arrangements that finance were putting in place throughout the year and making sure that the new finance system and the things that we were doing were as robust as possible at front rather than waiting to carry out the audit. So I can give the committee sort of some assurance that the new finance system is going well and the controls we're putting in place are good to make sure that we do get the right figures out and we have got the right processes in place even without that audit. It was better to do that than spend a lot of time doing an audit when Emma and her team were quite laid down in implementing the system
Stopping all the wood just so you can do an
audit. Right, so have members any other questions?
For just one point. I know we deal with
page, please.
Sorry, page 52, item 53. I know that we sell honey from our bees, but I noticed that we've got no allegations have been received regarding confidential reporting on ant fraud.
What, page 52?
52, yes.
Right.
Item 53.
Typo.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. That should be
it's just one of those things, I'd like to know I've read the report.
He's always proven that he's read the report.
I think it's important that they know we've read the report.
Oh, it is indeed, in case they think they can sneak something in.
Never in my mind.
So no other points, nothing on the appendix 1B or 1C, Mike?
As we've had a number of references to the new finance system, and we have Julie here with us, and we are the accounts committee, would it be possible to get a report on how she feels it's going?
Emma, I didn't know he was going to do that to you, and I would have warned you.
It is going well. It's fair to say that, and I should also point out that we didn't just change the finance system, we also changed the income management system at the same time. So it's fair to say it's been extremely difficult. We are closing down on this year, obviously on the new system for this financial year, but we were also delayed last year because of what we implemented, so we didn't actually, we were late on the audit, so we will be later on this year's audit. But I am confident that it is moving in the right direction and we are getting a lot of the back office things. What we focused on to start with was making sure that the creditors were okay and we were paying the people. We're sorting out the VAT returns and making sure that they were okay. The debtor side, and now what we're looking at is the reporting side from the GL side and more of the back office information for we've also done the scrutiny reports to members last year, but more of the monitoring reports and starting to make sure that all of that's okay. We did last year's budgets on the old finance system, and then we've just had some training today, yesterday, to get the budgets ready on this system. So what we're trying to make sure is that everything we look at, we ensure that the processes are enforced, we're happy we've got some notes, that everybody knows what we're doing, and that we touch it once and do it properly. And as I say, that's why when on some of them I'll say to Stephen, this is what I'm thinking of, do we think that hits all of the controls we need? And if so, yes, I'm happy, and we've made sure that as we put it in, it's what we need. And then we'll go back and look.
Thank you.
Finance systems the same in Stafford and Kelly?
It is for both authorities.
Okay.
Yes.
And we're actually just hoping then, Emma, at the very end of it all, it's really all worthwhile. All this hard work and all the hassle you've gone through, let's hope that it's worthwhile at the end of it all.
we did change it because the supplier that we were with said they were going out of the market and then they changed their mind after they'd already started. It is better. There are things that are better, and one of the things we had to do was we had to do make them tap digital for our VAT. Mm. So that does have an inbuilt module in our new system. So it will be better, and we just need to remember that when we had TOEFL, we had to get through those payments the first few years before it did exactly what we wanted it to do.
You know, I actually met Bob Keane, would you believe, whenever we were out one day. I met him. He's doing very well. It was nice to see him.
Was he still laughing because he got out?
Oh, he had a grin from there to there. He was just so delighted, so chuffed with himself. Right then, members, if you're happy, you've got no further questions then. What we are being asked to do, the recommendation is asking us to note the internal audit report for 21-22. So, members, will you please note that? Right? They've all noted it. They're all nodding their head. We think you can hear a nod of the head, but we can't really, can we? No. Right. Thanks very much for that, detail, Stephen. Very much appreciated, and for the input from Judith and from Emma. Right, where are we now? Tell me, we're on to 3C, are we?
Yep, page 59.
Right, we're going to let Judith take the stage now. Your turn, Judith. You're on next for item 3C, members. We're on to page 59, please.
Thank you, Chair. So this report is all about the annual governance statement 21-22, and if a lot of it looks familiar, it will do, because its roots are founded in the work that Stephen does on the annual audit report and from the risk register and a variety of other sources. But as well as covering the statement for the last financial year, it also gives you a progress update on the previous one, because we have to consider that in preparing it. So if I ask you to turn to page
60 members.
That just gives you a quick summary of the progress we made on the previous annual governance statement. So there were 11 significant governance issues in that, and 5 of those have either been completed in full or are on target to be completed as we've set out. 5 of the items are in progress, and then there's 1 item that work hasn't commenced on. I'm not going to talk through in detail the 10 that have either been completed or are in progress, because if they've not been completed, we'll be this year's statement, because anything that's not completed gets rolled over. But I will just mention the 1 item that hasn't been commenced, and that has been rolled over as well. But that was around the code of conduct for employees, and that was a conscious decision not to pick that up and pursue it. We'd actually done all the work, and it was close to being approved just as the pandemic hit, literally in that whole leadership team that sat and considered it. However, what we've found since then, and particularly with more staff working from home and there's now filing this hybrid model, there are things that we'd want to look at differently. And until we've completed the trial, it's not worth us actually updating that document. The one we've got is okay anyway, and it feels satisfactory. It covered the key things we needed to. But if we are going to go through the pain of updating it, I'd like us to pick up the lessons we're going to learn from the hybrid model. So as you'll see when we get into the statement for this year, we've referenced it again, but we're not going to look at that in any detail until next year now. So in terms of this year's statement, the one for 21-22, we've taken the usual progress. I have assurances for it, but we've discussed it with the leadership team. We've had a discussion around what we believe to be significant. I've referenced I've looked at Stephen's annual audit report, I've looked at the risk register, and that's led to the inclusion of the items that are set out. If my scroller can catch up with it on page, it's in appendix 1, and it's on
page 67.
Are you quicker than I am?
Oh no, I've got notes, you see, Judith.
Yes. As the chair says, it starts on page 67. I'll just run through those briefly in turn. So the first one we've got on there is financial stability. That's been a regular feature over the last few years, and that is primarily, as we touched on earlier, because of the unsettled nature of local government finances. It's not the Borough Council's situation, it's not a situation of the Council's making, it's because nationally there is this uncertainty around the funding for local government. As Emma explained earlier, in terms of business rate reviews and the amount of bonus, it just makes it very difficult for us to plan further than 12 months ahead. So that's why that one's reflected in there. The next one then is around the economy of the borough and the delivery of the economic growth strategy. That's kind of the strategic significance for the borough, partly linked to the financial settlement side of things, but more importantly, you know, sort of regenerating our town centres and all the other ambitions that the council has. That originally got sort of linked in off the back of COVID, where there was a real concern about the impact it was going to have on the economy. Obviously, as we've touched on, we've removed references to that. But it still remains an area that the borough is both focusing on and investing quite heavily. The council's key contractors, again, this was something that we initially picked on because of the impact that COVID had had on primarily two of the borough's key contractors, one being Freedom Leisure and the other one being the waste contractor, because in the first period of lockdown it had quite an impact on their ability to deliver. Whilst that has moved on and is much improved, we've kept in there because we are mindful of the impact that the rate of inflation could have for our key contractors this year. We're just keeping an eye on that. Officer capacity remains an ongoing issue. Things have been quite stretched over the last 2 years between essential services, delivery of project, and new services and responsibilities that have continued to keep that pressure on us. So we are monitoring all of that. And that kind of links in with the next item as well, which is around shared services. And as members will be aware, we are actively exploring whether to continue to share the chief executive and to extend our sharing of services to include the frontline services and the back office services that we've thus far not shared. We've completed the first stage of that business case, and council has given its approval for us to complete the second stage now, and that's anticipated to be with council in November. Cyber security again is an ongoing issue for us, but for everybody really, as we've already heard through the risk register. The technology team has done a lot of work, but there's one particular aspect that they weren't able to complete last year and is due to be completed that later this year, and that's around limiting access to the network only to those devices that have been either purchased corporately or are approved by the IT team and being able to have access to the network. Next one was all around the new finance system. Obviously we talked about quite a bit about that this evening and the problems they've had, and this is just on there reflecting those ongoing issues, and hopefully that will be something that we're able to resolve and move forward from next year. The next item is the employee code of conduct that I've just mentioned as being the one item that we didn't do any work on in the last year, and it's now got a revised schedule of 23-24. If the hybrid model trial is successful, we may be able to start work on that a little bit sooner, but that was me being naturally cautious in trying to say we've got quite a bit of work to get done this year, let's just move it on the year. And then last but by no means least is the information governance item. We've managed to make some progress on this in terms of retention of documents, but there's again just one piece of work that needs to be completed, which is around the overarching framework that sits above the specific policies. So it kind of sits above our data protection policy, it sits above our freedom of information, it just ties it all together. And that one actually sits with me at the moment. My data protection officer has drafted that piece of work. I just need to find the time to review it and sign it off and put it into leadership team for their consideration. Which I am able to do before the calendar year is
out.
So I'd say they're the issues that leadership team believe are the significant issues that continue to be faced by the council. And this is kind of backward looking and front looking, so I'd say it reflects what's gone on in 21-22, but it also has an eye to this current year as well. But I'm happy to take any questions on that.
Right, ma'am, so we're actually looking here at Appendix 1. Do any of you have any questions you want to raise on any of those questions up to and including page 71? Tony, is your hand up?
Just the two, actually. The officer capacity. When you say it's going to be kept under review, are you going to consult the staff on this as part of that review? Or is it to see if they feel that they're being overworked, to put it bluntly, or is it just the opinion of the senior management team?
It's not that sort of review, if I'm honest. What we do as a leadership team is we look at the key areas of work, we look at the fault in the delivery of the operational work, we look at the key projects that we've got, whether there are any issues, and then these new initial duties, and we're always constantly juggling priorities and kind of looking. There are certain teams that we aware of some of the issues that planning have had, their challenges, and there's been agreements bringing some extra resource for that. You'll be aware as well of obviously the situation we've had with a couple of retirements in leadership team and the fact that we've had to bring injuries. So it's kind of those decisions at that level that we're making. We do only have a limited amount of budget to spend, so that constrains us somewhat in what we can do. So I'd say it's more about juggling and reassessing constantly where we move our resources around and how we best focus them really.
Well, the other question was about the cyber security. How are you going to monitor if people are using unauthorised devices to access the network?
The IT team can tell you that. they will know. They're able to tell through.
It will have an IP address that it only will allow that device to have that. Why are they being allowed to access it now through those unauthorised devices, for want of a better word?
I think it's just for the approach that's been taken, that it hasn't kind of been compulsory for members or indeed certain officers to kind of use corporate devices, but they are slowly changing that. It's just this period of adjustment and acceptance, really, this is the direction that we're heading in. But yes, I will make sure that the head of technology does give good notice to members and that you don't just get put off, that you need some sort of warning. But at some point, they will be able to block access. So if it's not on a corporate device or one that they approve for another specific reason, then actually access will not be allowed.
As we're on our borough machines, they're okay.
Yeah. Now, I found myself blocked in my borough machine, where it's just said, this is not a secure access. And I thought, well, why is it not? And then I couldn't turn the thing off. I thought, well, this thing, if you turn everything off and then turn it back on again, it'll work. And I couldn't get it to turn off. And I thought, if I pull out all the plugs, will it just go onto the battery and it's not switched off? And I just, it says slide down to switch off, and it wouldn't slide down. It was just, I thought, something wrong with my fingers. I just cannot do it. Anyway, just one point, Judith, that I wanted to say. Is there a lot of time being spent on these shared services? You did stress here at the bottom of page 69 that you're not only talking here about the chief executive is in actual fact a shared service at the moment, but you're also looking at or have looked at shared back office services and probably frontline services. You're looking at frontline services as well, so your frontline services, that perhaps be the likes of licensing and planning and enforcement, all of these things for shared services.
All services are being considered. So at the moment, it's primarily involved the heads of service looking at them. Some of them have involved their managers as well. And they're only doing kind of a high level assessment. There is a core team of us as well doing some other pieces of work. So yes, there is a reasonable amount of work being put into that because we need to be able to give members the right information in order to make a decision later in the year. It's kind of doing that balance on that one. So, and we have brought in a little bit of extra resource, certainly at the moment, helping out on the finance side of things with some of the information we need to bring that side.
Right, so all services. Brendan?
Shared services. It says the council to be chair of the number of services with staff of borough council, which is council of the borough. Should we go through
What page are you at?
Page 69, shared services.
No, you're absolutely right. It should be. You can't take this.
I missed that, didn't you?
You'll have to forgive when we're writing two at the same time. It's very easy to continue in the same vein.
I think Gary's dead.
That was the one that should have gone to Canada.
We've got their audit committee tomorrow, so I'll probably find the one that then does that Canada.
Right, is there anything else that anyone that Judith wants to raise? Up to page 80 is your remit, Judith. Anything?
No, there's nothing else I want to say. Anything that's been kind of appendix 2, which is the progress report from the previous year, has actually almost by default been covered in the main update. There were only a couple of items that have actually been completed in full. So the response to the recovery from the pandemic, that one had been completed. And off the top of my head, I think the other one was around decision-making meetings, whereas members should all be familiar that we had to put some interim arrangements in place in the initial phase of the pandemic, when everything went remote and then we kind of moved back. We now feel as though we're in a stable position with that, so that's been removed and it's not been carried forward as an issue. Everything else that we have.
Right, are there any members, anything else they wanted to raise on Appendix 2 at all? Are you all quite happy? That'll be a relief if you're all quite happy.
Yeah,
Right. Can I just say to you that I am expected, if you look at page 71, I am expected to sign this document, but I am not signing it as me, myself. I am signing it on behalf of the Audit Committee. So it's not my neck that's on the line, it's all of your necks that are on the line.
We don't have to set up shots on it.
So, the recommendation is that the committee approve the annual governance statement for 21-22, and I should sign it on your behalf, as well as the leader of the council and the chief executive. Right, you all agree to that?
James taking a note of who agreed.
Yes.
Could you all please say yes and don't just nod your head so that we can hear you?
I think we agreed to
I want proof that you've agreed
just
to that.
Change
of wording characters. Oh, that will be shared.
There's an anger.
Right. I think I had only one question that gave me cause for concern. Yes, it's there on page 74. And it's to do with the delivery of the Stafford Town Centre Transformation Programme, including year one delivery of the Future High Street Funds Project. And it's saying here, the two public realm projects centred on the approach to Stafford Station and the Market Square. It says discussions surrounding the key land and property acquisitions have not progressed as well and have held up delivery. Alternative projects may well have to be looked at if resolutions cannot be found. Should that be giving us cause for concern regarding the town centre transformation programme, this thing where you're mentioning about the land and property acquisitions?
It's not an unusual situation for any council to find itself in when you've got these big transformation projects, particularly where it's well documented in the public domain that, you know, that the council has won additional funding. Anybody who's got kind of land that's tied up in those will be aware of that, and they'll be looking to get a better deal out of the council, and for the council to have its own view on how much it thinks it's worth, and there'll come a point where actually we wouldn't go that far, and I believe that's what's happened in this situation. The owner of the land wanted significantly more than the borough was prepared to pay for it. So rather than doing that, the borough is now reconsidering looking at this way and perhaps varying the project as originally planned. So wouldn't be concerned that the borough has acted prudently in what it wanted to do, but it now just means to be a little bit forced while they're looking and thinking how they might do things differently.
Right, okay. Right. Thank you for that. Right, and we need to make sure that Emma feels that she's got a bit of work to do here, so we're going to ask Emma to deal with this last item on the programme here. Please, Emma, so you're dealing with item 3D, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This report is bringing forward a proposal to change the Treasury Management statutory report, which came in February, which we approved. Basically, because of the one-off nature, we've had a lot of COVID grant money and we've had council energy rebate money, we've also got levelling up money. So what we've found is we've got a significant increase in temporary resource cash levels. So what we wanted to do, or proposing to do, is to increase our deposits with money market funds from 6 million to 9 million. We have got, I think we've got about 6 different money market funds. Five money market funds, and at the moment, as at the 14th of July, we actually have £81 million in investments across the items on page 83 at 5.6. What we wanted to do was, the money market funds are quite receptive, they are very good investments, and they are quite receptive to rate changes, so we get a better rate as the rates are increasing, and obviously they're going up at the moment. So what we wanted to do was just give ourselves flexibility to have that extra money and extra headroom in the money market funds.
So it's to be more readily available to us?
So the money market funds we can withdraw and invest on any given day.
Right.
So we're not tying them up.
Right.
And we try and have a spread. So we have got some investments that are longer, because obviously you don't want all of the investments in one particular area, so we try and do a spread. Because at the moment, obviously, we're trying to keep pace with the rate changes, so we don't really want to invest for 12 months when that rate could well go up at this point.
Peter, you're going to be bold enough to make a comment here. Carry on.
Come on. No, I was just going to say, is there somebody at the borough who rings these investment people up and say, we've got a couple of million, we want you. How does it work? I mean, I just...
So we have, for the money market funds, we have a portal, because the money market fund is a pooled investment vehicle, so we effectively invest our money into that pool, and then they then take that money and put it in investment, so that's why they can get a better return. And with the fixed deposits for the time, we have a broker. So we would phone, they would say, oh, we've got this rate, and then they would say, yes. But the thing that's changed is you cannot do a deal with somebody without having all of the paperwork. So they've made it professional, they call it MIFID, but we had all these professional arrangements to do so. In order to set the new counterparty, you have to do all these forms associated with, say, that you have the professional expertise to make these investments. All of that behind everything that we set up. There are local authorities that offer and want to lend money off us, but when we have those, I always like to say, well, before we do that, we want to look at their audit report to check what they're doing, and we want to understand why it is that they want to invest, they want money off other councils. That's why they're not in the same position as us. So I'm kind of a bit more cautious about the local authorities. Some of them have a part,
because
you're not supposed to borrow to one lender. So I just kind of...
Madam Chair, and these people
we're lending
to are fairly secure.
So we have linked Treasury advisors. They advise us on our Treasury investments. And they give us, they have different colours, and we know, and we take their advice, and we have regular meetings with them to
I presume they're just advice.
Yeah.
Mike?
Could I ask why we're depositing money with Handelsbank at 0.25%?
That is a call account, and I am absolutely gobsmacked that we're still doing that at 0.25, but I think, and I also did check the rate at the 14th of July, so that is now being removed from Handelsbanken.
Right.
And I think what we will do is, our Treasury officer has left and our new one starts on the 3rd of August.
Didn't take 6 million.
So I think one of the first things I will get into is to look to see
That's
obviously the other part of it, because we have got some successful Handelsbanken. If we've got more headroom in our money market funds, we can obviously put it in the areas that give us better interest. But at that time, we have an account set up at Handelsbanken, so we can't leave it and be getting nothing in our current account, because we also break the limits, because we can only leave 6 million in our current account. So, 0.25
So when the cabinet member tells us to be careful because we've got no money, it's actually lying through the
teeth. So it does look terrible, because we obviously have 81 million here, but we don't actually have 81 million.
Yeah, Brent. Brendan.
Through you, Al Ryan Bank, where is that place?
It is a UK bank, so it will sound like it's a foreign bank, it is a UK secure bank.
I just wonder if we have any sort of moral issues where we're depositing funds.
If I could do it.
Yeah.
Being new to this committee, I can understand the maturity dates on these investments, but what do MMF and Core and Core 180 mean?
So just underneath the table, you've got the MFF, which is the money market.
Oh, sorry, that's me not looking at it properly.
Yeah, that's
okay. Yeah. Cool. Oh, yes, I see.
Doesn't matter, you can ask questions, that's fine.
I should have
And when they're as easy as that, we love them. Yeah, so anything else, members, do you want to explain it further to Emma?
Could I just ask, Chair, are we doing the same thing to National Westminster Bank? Because they're only 0.58.
That will be maturing on the 4th of August.
So
at that point, they will, obviously we invested that on the 4th of November.
Yeah.
So they will probably be giving us a better rate now because the rates have increased over this period. So some of the newer ones are the same as Nationwide. So the Nationwide was 0.88, so I'll be expecting that to be much higher once that comes back.
Right, you're happy with that? Right, anything else?
They're canny slots, aren't they? Bankers,
Portland. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Right then, members, we're being asked on page 81, the recommendation is to increase the monetary limits with MMFs from 6 million to 9 million. Well, seeing it's not your own money. So, are you all agreeing to that? Right, thank you, members. Now, we don't have any other business in this committee, but I just wanted to say that we haven't for a wee while had any training, have we, Emma? And I wonder if there's anything in the pipeline, especially when you've got a new member.
In terms of the accounts,
Are you snowed under at the moment?
We are hoping to have completed the accounts by the end of September, so we will be delayed again this year in the audit and sign-off. I don't have a date for the auditors to come in. What I will do is, once the audit is in progress, we will make sure that we book in the training earlier, maybe we do some on the draft accounts.
Yeah.
And just talk you through those draft accounts so that we can do that in a more...
Yeah, I think that would be fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we don't want a great big long session. You know, would be helpful. Judith.
Chair, I mean, if the council's really keen, we're actually doing some training in Canuck tomorrow because we elect by thirds, we have to do it every year. We've got new members on our committee, so we are running some training tomorrow afternoon at 4:30. Bit of a shame because it actually covers a lot of what's on the agenda tonight, but if you wanted to, you'd be more than welcome.
At very short notice, actually, Judith, I don't think we can all suddenly just...
We've got planning tomorrow.
Planning, and it's going to be a marathon tomorrow night from what I gather. But thanks for the offer. It might actually be worthwhile if there's training going on there where maybe if we were told in the future, then we could maybe take that into consideration. We could maybe come mob handed and join in. And I did say to Stephen, it's a long time since we as the audit committee met Stephen on our own. That is, we have in the past met with Stephen, and we always meet with the external auditors half an hour before the meeting so that we can ask the external auditors any questions that we want to, and it's just the external auditors and ourselves. We can also have a session where we have Stephen, our internal auditor, on his own with us to ask any questions. So that is something that we would actually need to factor in. And I think actually the next time we're having the external auditors coming to the meeting, then we might have Stephen at the same time, so that we can ask any questions of Stephen and the external auditors.
We stopped having external auditors because we were paying their mortgage from Birmingham for the camera.
So I think, you know, that will conclude the meeting for tonight. You'll all be glad to know.
Just to come back to a point we raised earlier, sorry to jump back to the end. I have found what that abbreviation is.
SGRIP, did you Google it?
SGRIP, it's Stafford Growth Regeneration and Infrastructure Partnership.
I'm going to write that in the back of my hand.
apparently it's a meeting with ourselves, the County Council, the Local Enterprise Partnership and the Town Centre Partnership and Chamber of Commerce. So it's to oversee sort of growth and regeneration in the borough.
Right, that's good. So the next time you'll stamp it on the paper so that we know what it means.
I felt I have to mention every organisation that was involved in the
process. Chair, I won't ask the head of
development,
we have found
out. Okay, you've now told us what it means. Can I thank you all for your attendance tonight? Can I thank Stephen and Judith and Emma for coming along this evening? And thank you for your attendance tonight. And thank you very much for coming, Mark, to sit and watch us all.
Do they have sandwiches at Canada now?